some new faces in here. So guys, welcome. LJ, I see you rocking the new
Yeah,
lunch
thank
shirt.
you.
Thanks for
Appreciate it.
representing. Yeah. So how's things going for yourself with Mark, man? He says you guys are doing great.
Yeah, Mark's great. He really is. So he's very hands-on.
So before we get into our sleep conversation, actually, I'd love to ask you, LJ, you had some conversations about TRT. Do you mind talking about it, or do you want to talk about it after the call? Kind of like,
no, not at all. I mean, this is, I guess, the place to share it. You know, maybe I can help somebody, or somebody can help me besides yourself. But yeah, if, like I told Mark, if I'm being totally honest and self-reporting, for several years with other coaches that I've had, I've been on just about everything you can think of, Ben, and you know what I'm saying, besides my prescribed testosterone. So I had some blood work done. I was probably mid last year that it really woke me up, so to speak. So I dropped everything other than my TRT. Granted, my prescribed TRT is pretty high. It's 400. My prescribed is 400 a week. And then on
is that from a legit doc, or is that from like a
yes,
TRT clinic?
No, that's from my PA. So, and I'd always told her, you know, finally found somebody that, because I could never find anybody that would put me on TRT, Ben, because I was within that quote unquote range, barely above, but within that range. And, you know, I always told them, I'm not your typical, at that time, 55, 60 year old, sit on the couch, eat bonbon man. I mean, I'm fairly active in the gym all the time. And just, I felt better when my testosterone was higher. And so I did find a doctor that would kind of listen to me, at least put me on some. And we started at the 400, and she said, let's keep an eye on it. So we did. And then, but that's when, you know, I started all the other stuff with my other coaches, you know, the cycles and stuff. So.
Yeah. So I'll say this to everybody listening. I don't advocate for cycles, man. You know, and I'm not a hypocrite. Like, if someone's going to do it, I'll tell you how to do it correctly. But I'm not someone who's going to say, hey, man, you should be doing this and this and this. Like, if anything, I'm a minimum effective dose guy. Like, what's the least you can do if you're going to do anything?
Right.
Excuse me. Rather than like, how much can you do? And I think so many other coaches out there, unfortunately, who have never competed, don't know their ass from a hole in the ground, just put people on and put women on drugs. It blows my mind. Anyways. So your goal is to get off now, LJ, just to kind of summarize?
Yeah, well, so I got that blood work that scared the shit out of me. So I got off of everything, and other than my prescribed dose. And after I got some more blood work in November of last year and showed significant decrease. I mean, when my estrogen was within range, my prostate dropped dramatically because it was super, super elevated. I mean, I've done all the tests, cancerous, all that stuff. I just had, from sins of the past, and that's what's happened. Just, you know, being stupid. So my PSA actually was at 13 mid last year. November it was down to 8, and then I just got some more blood work done first part of this month, and it's decreased again. My question, Ben, is because the testosterone just shows above 15. It doesn't show a number yet. So who
That's
knows what is that?
That's
the free, free is the free is at, I'm looking at that right now. Free is down from 50 in November to 39 now.
Okay.
So I mean, things are coming down. I just don't know exactly where my testosterone level's at. And so my question was, because you, when we talked, you know, when originally signed up, you had me cut back to, I think, 150 a week. I think it's what, if I remember right. So I cut it even way back. And so I'm
so
just wondering.
Physiologically, right? So So physiologically, at your age, at any age, your body's producing maybe 30 milligrams a day, maybe. On a high end. So 30 milligrams a day, you know, spread over 7 days, that's where they landed, like 200 milligrams a week. Technically, if you did 30 milligrams a day for 7 days, it'd be about 200 milligrams a week. But as you age, that becomes less. So general range is going to be somewhere between 150 and 210 for most people to hit to balance out what your body would physiologically produce. Here's the catch. Just because I'm administering it exogenously doesn't necessarily mean my body's going to use what I consume or use what I put in. So the goal isn't just to take 100 milligrams. The goal is to get my body to use the most it possibly can. That's where the health of the system comes in. And that's where the administration dose also comes in, right? The dosing schedule. So the best way to dose testosterone, it seems to be, is daily. So doing about 30 milligrams daily or even 25 milligrams daily is the best way to do it, because you prevent the spikes in estrogen, you prevent the spikes in DHT. Because if I do it even twice a week, I get these big spikes in testosterone, and the body responds by either, you know, testosterone, if it's too high, goes either estrogen pathway or goes DHT pathway, both of which have potential benefits, potential detriments. So we're trying to prevent the conversion, or at least modulate the conversion. You're never going to prevent it. You're going to minimize it or modulate it. So that's the first thing. Get your body not converted to DHT and estrogen. Second thing is, well, how do I get my body to actually use this stuff? So it's not just about the total testosterone, as we say, it's about the free testosterone, which is then associated. We're looking at SHBG, like, is my SHBG very high? How can I get that down? So those are things we're looking at. So this is just a kind of a summary for everybody listening and why this is a useful conversation. So then we're looking at, well, why are the receptors either working or not working? Because the receptor ultimately is at the level of the cell. It has to cross the cell membrane, go into your DNA, and turn on DNA transcription or translation, transcription, then translation. So then we have to say, well, is the cell receiving the signal? Because now the cell is dependent on, you know, every cell in the body, you know, picture a single cell, has this membrane called the phospholipid bilayer. And if that phospholipid bilayer is any way dysfunctional from your, you know, oxidative stress, DNA damage, or even from what I know, the phospholipid bilayer composition really matters. So if it's too much omega-6 versus omega-3, omega-9s, and saturates, the literal ratio of fats can influence how well your body takes it in. There's also genetic considerations there as well. So from like an optimization perspective, anyone who knows what they're doing should be looking at every level of that. It's not just like, hey, take more testosterone. That is a solution for some people. But what you'll see, LJ, is that over a certain amount, your body is going to convert. And the more you convert, the more you're going to get negative side effects, for sure. And so the negative side effects are things you're seeing, your PSA going up, your estrogen going up. And, right. And like, eventually what starts to happen is the oxidative stress becomes so high that inflammation, oxidative stress, and insulin resistance are the primary causes of disease, right? So you start driving oxidative stress, and that's what's going to cause atherosclerosis or arteriosclerosis. So that's what you're afraid of ultimately. So if your blood pressure is elevated, you got to fix it. If your inflammation CRP type numbers are elevated, you got to fix it. And if your resting blood glucose is elevated, you got to fix it. And then your oxidative stress, I'm going to guess, is going to be elevated, because that's what testosterone does. And so we got to modulate that, right? And that's with certain types of micronutrients. I know that's kind of a big dump, but it's for everyone listening. That's how you want to think about this stuff if you are going to take testosterone. So what is your question directly,
Jose? So my question, Ben, with not even actually knowing what my actual testosterone is, because it just shows above 15 on the blood work, should I just completely get off of it for now and then get some more blood work, or just minimize?
You shouldn't get off of it, because, you know, the likelihood of heart attack goes up the lower your testosterone, man. This is where people get messed up. There's two things that are counterintuitive. Low cholesterol and low testosterone are actually more correlated with heart disease and heart attacks than high testosterone and high cholesterol. So people are like, oh, I want to bring my cholesterol down. I'm like, no, you don't. You don't necessarily need to bring your cholesterol down. So cholesterol is not a bad thing. Cholesterol becomes a bad thing when there's damage to the artery lining, right, at the arterial walls, which usually comes from inflammation and oxidative stress. So if we can modulate your inflammation and oxidative stress, the cholesterol being elevated in your blood is not a problem. So that's where there's some nuance. So I wouldn't stop. I would just go to daily administrations, 25 to 30 milligrams a day, maybe 5 days a week. And then if you're taking any anti-estrogens, and now I'm not a doctor, man, so I would ask your doctor, but in my opinion, don't take anti-estrogens. I'm not a fan at all. There's some data showing these things cause micro-blistering of the arteries and capillary networks, which ultimately causes calcification. So the way to think of coronary calcium is it's almost like mortar. It's like filling the gaps. If there's damage and stress to the walls from oxidative stress and inflammation, the calcium is like filling the holes. It's a protective mechanism. So if you have arterial plaques, it's because it's protecting you. Otherwise you would die. You have venous leakage, which like is even worse. Yeah. So yeah, I wouldn't stop, man. I would just reduce your dose.
Everything, I mean, estrogens, well, it's down from 187 in November to 152 now. So it's well within range. And I've been able to keep the estrogen level within range. It's just, you know, I just let my testosterone level get so high that, you know, I feel like I've suffered with one, the PSA and some other stuff, but pretty much the blood work shows really good for being, I guess, my age, but just wondering about getting that testosterone level back down the best way I can.
I don't think having high testosterone is a bad, if it's off the charts, but then it is bad because it's going to cause oxidative stress, but I would just change your dosing schedule, man. As soon as you do that, it's going to change. Yeah. It's going to change.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Cause, and as far as the anti-estrogens, I was taking the Remedex. I'm quit taking it and just going to monitor. I did look into that enclomiphene that you suggest. I did get a prescription, but, it's
talk to
very
talk to your endocrinologist because it's expensive for sure. Talk to your endocrinologist because there may be some case for taking super low amounts of Arimidex and Astrazol, but in general, I don't take it. But just because I don't take it doesn't mean you might not need it. So I would just like talk to your endocrinologist and don't take advice from random coaches telling you to take a bunch of gear. There's a tip of the day.
Yeah. No. I'm pretty much off. Well, not pretty much. I am off of everything else. In fact, I threw everything away and just trying to, you know, stay healthy. Good. You know, I have no intentions of trying to step on stage anywhere. So there's no reason for me to be taking all that other stuff.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So let me shift gears because everyone showed up here to hear about my theories on sleep. So I'm going to give this to you guys quick. It's also ties into testosterone. So there's two things that I solve for when I think about sleep. Now, this is my theory. This is not a proven theory, but you'll get why this is my theory and it makes sense. So the two things that I think we have to solve for when it comes to sleep are energy and arousal. And so what energy means is, you know, your body is burning through a certain amount of energy per day. And that's obviously influenced by oxygen. It's also influenced by carbon dioxide. And so if I'm not active enough throughout the day, so the byproduct of energy production throughout the day is adenosine, right? Adenosine triphosphate. Your body creates this adenosine byproduct. And adenosine accumulates in the brain to create sleep pressure. So that desire to like fall asleep, that's because of adenosine. When we drink coffee, we block adenosine receptors in the brain. That's why coffee works. So there's this energy part of sleep, right? So when I think about sleep, I'm thinking about, well, is this, if you're not sleeping well, first thing is this person burning enough energy throughout the day? Are you expending enough energy throughout the day so that you can put your body into a state of, you know, depletion of ultimately being tired, being having burned through enough energy. Now, this plays into cortisol as well. So the thing that ultimately regulates energy burning or energy expenditure primarily is going to be cortisol and adrenaline. And so if we're not having effective rhythms of cortisol and adrenaline throughout the day, meaning high in the morning and low in the evening, then this energy production cycle, this energy equation becomes dysregulated. So your body's producing energy at the wrong times. It's not producing enough energy when you need it. So the way we solve for this energy equation is we say, well, I want to make sure that I'm getting enough movement, getting enough exercise, ideally early in the day. And if it's late in the day, that's fine, but you got to make sure that you're taking in, that your intensity is a little bit lower, ideally late in the day, Or are you doing something that tends to bring down your state of arousal late in the day? The other things that drive energy, and energy and arousal are obviously very, very much inextricably linked. But the other thing that drives energy and arousal are going to be light, heat, and food. And those are your three primary drivers of both energy and arousal states in the body. And so when you think of arousal, you're thinking of like, when am I supposed to be awake? And when am I supposed to be sleeping? And so that's governed by hormones, but it's also governed by neurotransmitters. So ask yourself, if you're having a hard time sleeping, and I was just actually talking to Andy about this yesterday. So if you're having a hard time sleeping, one of those two is out of whack. And for most people, it's probably this, well, it could be both energy and arousal. And I'll explain how. So how many people on this call wake up in the middle of the night, sometimes have a hard time getting back to bed? Yeah. So we're very blessed to have Dr. Jacques on here. Are you still here, Jacques? So yeah, there you're there. So I don't know if you have any feedback on this, but I'm going to give you my theory, and you guys can, there's a lot of potential reasons why you could wake up, but for aging men, it seems as though it's going to be influenced by blood oxygen saturation and ultimately the accumulation of CO2. So here's what sometimes happens. This is something I find often, and when we fix this, it seems to fix people's sleep. So many people, as you are, if you're overweight or older or very muscular, you can snore, and snoring causes this decrease in oxygen saturation percentages in the blood. And as your oxygen saturation goes down, your CO2 goes up. And if the CO2 goes up, your body assumes that it's in a stressed state. So this accumulation of CO2 shifts you to being more in an acidic state in your blood, and your body starts releasing cortisol and adrenaline, and that wakes people up. So if you're someone who doesn't have great oxygenation during the day and when you sleep, your body will wake you up as a protective mechanism so you don't die if the blood oxygen starts getting very low. So we have to solve for this oxygen equation at a very base level. I'm not saying it's going to work for everybody, but a very base level. So if you're someone that snores, if you breathe through your mouth, or if at any point during the day you feel drowsy, you feel a little bit low, sometimes that could be due to the absence of adequate oxygen and maybe the accumulation of excessive CO2. So we have to start training ourselves to become effective breathers through our nose, using our diaphragm effectively, so that we always maintain a high level of oxygen saturation. So there's something called a pulse oximeter. I usually have one right beside me. I literally travel with this thing. I think it's here. Oh, yeah, there. You guys have all seen one at the doctor. You know, they do this thing, they put your finger in it, and they check your blood oxygenation, right? So it's like $100. I suggest most people have one, especially if you have a hard time sleeping. And I need mine to stay above 99% all the time. Otherwise, I know that I'm not moving enough, or I'm not breathing enough. So I want to build in a practice around like, hey, if I put that thing on right now and it comes out at 92%, I know that I'm not getting enough oxygen into my system. I'm going to get outside. I'm going to breathe deeply. I'm going to move a lot. I'm going to oxygenate my system. I want my blood oxygen to always be certainly above 96%, ideally 98 or 99%. And so if you could imagine, if throughout the day you're sitting a lot and the blood oxygenation starts to drop, CO2 starts to go up, this can cause a stressed response in your body. The body becomes a little bit worried that your blood oxygenation is going to drop, and it causes a stress response. Now, if this happens when you sleep, guess what happens? You're waking up. And so if you're someone who snores, or if you're someone who mouth breathes, some of the easy solutions are you got to pay attention to it during the day, and or consider using mouth tape. So if I use mouth tape probably 5 nights a week. I just put a strip of tape like that. If I wake up in the morning and the mouth tape is off, I know that I've been mouth breathing. In general, it keeps my mouth closed. I'm not snoring. I'm able to keep my blood oxygenation elevated throughout my sleep. As soon as I open my mouth, I start snoring. Blood oxygen tends to drop. I tend to keep this thing near my bed. If I wake up in the middle of the night, I can check it. I'm like, oh, shoot, I'm 92%. No wonder I woke up. OK, People think they wake up to sleep, excuse me, to pee. It's not the reality. Nobody wakes up to pee. Some maybe, but in general, you're peeing because you've woken up. You've come into this really shallow state of sleep, and you're not able to sleep well. Excuse me, you're not able to sleep through it. Normally, your body will has more than enough capacity to hold pee through the night. So this is one of the problems that I find to be very common and a really easy fix for guys to be able to improve. Now, if you're getting enough aerobic fitness, meaning cardio, you're getting enough high quality food, you're not eating shitty food, you're breathing well through your nose, you actually use your nose as a breathing apparatus, you can tend to be more effective at sleeping through the night. Also, I should say that a weak diaphragm is another reason why, and heavy body weight and a weak diaphragm are two reasons why people tend to mouth breathe at night. So think of like if you lay on your back, and I put a 45-pound plate on your chest, and I say, breathe. Most people aren't going to be able to breathe through that because they don't have the diaphragmatic control or the diaphragmatic strength to overcome that. Now, imagine if you're overweight, all that weight is sitting on your chest and your stomach, preventing you from breathing. Now, the muscles of the pecs have to become breathing musculature instead of just having the diaphragm because the diaphragm's weak. So again, that's kind of a lot of information, but that's one mechanism. Another mechanism is this arousal mechanism, which there's a lot of considerations around hormones and neurotransmitters. So understanding how your hormones and neurotransmitter work is important. I won't get into the details, but it's really meant to be this cyclical thing where when you're awake in the morning, you're sleeping in the evening, governed by light, heat, and food. And if you can preferably front load your light, heat, and food early in the day, then the chances are your body's going to become cooler, not have as much bright light, and obviously not exercise at night, be prepared for sleep. There's other considerations around neurotransmitters, which is ultimately the chemicals that tell you to be focused or awake or asleep. But again, if you're getting the morning light, excuse me, the morning light exposure, the exercise and the food early in the day, most people's hormones and neurotransmitters will correct themselves. So it's a lot of talking. It's a lot of words. I'm going to pause, take a break, ask if there's any questions.
Hey Ben, Andy, is there a good mapping tracking device that you can go back and historically see what your oxygen levels are while you sleep?
Like retroactively?
So if I
Doesn't.
sleep and then I wake up in the morning, I can go back and look at, okay, 2 a.m. I woke up and at 1:30 my oxygen levels were at 92. Instead of
Yeah, I don't
96.
know, but I would suspect that there is. I
Okay.
don't know, but I would suspect that there is. So I think Aura is used. I know that they've added a pulse ox into their most recent ring, like the Aura 3. I know that the Garmin does it, but you have to like do it. It doesn't like constantly monitor it. So I would highly suspect that there is a monitor. I just don't know. Does anyone else know one? Jacques? Anyone else? Apple Watch. But it does, Jimmy, does it do it all the time, or do you have to like actually like hit it to start?
I was just looking at mine because I don't pay that much attention, but it does it routinely through the day.
Oh, that's good. There you go. Yeah, Apple Watch. So Apple Watch, guys, as much as I try not to be like a zealot for any company, it's the best wearable by far. Like, it's better than the Aura. It's better than the Garmin. I have a Garmin. I have the most high-end Garmin. This costs me more than the Apple Watch, and it doesn't do nearly as much as the Apple Watch. It's not as accurate. So maybe a worthwhile investment. Although I'll say the one thing about the Apple Watch that I hate is it's got Wi-Fi. This thing, the reason I chose this one is it doesn't have Wi-Fi, and I can turn off the Bluetooth. So I'm not a fan at all of Wi-Fi on my body when I'm sleeping. So if you can get an Apple Watch that turns off the Wi-Fi, I think you can probably do that. Put it on like airplane mode or something.
Ben, quick question.
Anyone else? Yeah.
You mentioned if you wake up in the middle of the night, you check your blood pressure or the blood oxygen levels, and if you're at 92%, okay, that's why I woke up. Do you have a method to falling back to sleep after noticing that to bring your blood oxygen levels back
Yeah.
up?
So Man, like anything in life, it's a skill. So the ability to fall back asleep is really about learning to calm your body. So you guys have heard me talk about this before, I'm sure, but the idea of like, I can hold consciousness in two places at once. I can be in the future. I can be in the past. I can be inside of my body and I can be outside of my body. And so my suggestion is you create an internal awareness. It's almost like a yoga nidra where like, I'm really focused on coming back to my breathing, focus on what's happening inside my body, focus on slowing down my heart rate, focus on slowing down my breathing rate. If I can just bring my awareness inside my body and calm myself down, I'm back to sleep pretty quickly. The worst thing you can do in the world is check your phone and get out of bed, right? If you go, so one of my favorite things about this watch is it's got a light on the watch. So if I get up to go to the bathroom, I can just turn this thing on. I have to turn the big light on. So like this might be the most useful thing I use on the phone, on the watch. Keeping the stimulus low, don't look at your phone. Don't worry about the fact that you've waken up. Go pee, get back in bed as quick as you can, back on your breathing. And eventually you'll sleep through the night. Like, I don't think I wake up at all anymore. Certainly for my entire bodybuilding career, I didn't know any of this stuff. So I was up every night in the middle of the night to pee. I just thought it was normal. And maybe it was because I was, you know, obviously very big and probably very poorly breathing. But now I'm pretty good. So, I think it's a skill, Cody. So I would say, like, if you've never done a yoga nidra before, try one someday, like in the evening time. And it's really just this like body scan where you're kind of bringing your focus into your internal awareness.
Yoga what? What are you calling it?
N-I-D-R-A, nidra. Perfect. If you look it up on YouTube, there's some really great ones.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
So, guys, you know, I could spew supplements at you all day for sleep, but the way better approach is like learn to control your physiology. So we control our physiology through effective breathing, arousal control, energy management. You know, it's a way more effective approach. It's also the most effective approach to improving our testosterone. Like, I was like, oh, I'm going to take supplements to improve my testosterone. I'm like, well, how are you sleeping? Are you getting morning light exposure? You know, those are the two biggest levers to improve natural testosterone, morning light exposure and sleep by far. Obviously, food's a big one. Training's a big one. But like morning light exposure is massive because it drives up dopamine. And sleep is obviously massive because it helps recovery and inflammation management, insulin sensitivity, cellular optimization, hormones. It's the difference between yoga nidra. And same thing, just a different name, Dennis. And NSDR, yeah, same thing. Non-sleep deep rest. What other questions have you, gentlemen? So as you guys hear, I can spew on sleep all day long. So if you guys have any questions about supplements or best approaches, there's a lot of stuff that I've read or learned or heard about that I could probably help you with, but it has to be case specific. Des, what you got, brother?
I've got a question. As I've got like a little lad, he's like 15, 16 months old. So the last like 15, 16 months, I've been up through the middle of the night, having to like pick him up, bring him through the bedroom, whatever. And then I really find it hard to kind of get back to sleep when that happens. What I was wondering is, do you like, for example, if you get up at 6 o'clock and that's your schedule, do you try and grab extra hours when you can? Like, say, for example, if you can get back to sleep at 6 o'clock and sleep till 8, do you take those hours or do you stick to your schedule of waking up at 6 o'clock every day or waking up at 7 o'clock every day?
Is he up in the middle of the night every night?
Not every night. It's strange because like I get in like a routine of like waking up at like 2 or 3 o'clock, and then some nights he'll like sleep all the way through, and then I kind of still kind of get up at 2, 3 o'clock. So, and then that's when I struggle to get back to sleep. So it's kind of difficult to kind of get a schedule.
And so it's funny. I have a coach. I have a couple of coaches, and I spoke with my coach Monday, and he was telling me about he's got a 14-month-old, and they just hired a sleep coach for the 14-month-old, and they created this routine. And he goes, my son has never slept through the night. Now he's been sleeping 12 or 14 hours a night every night since we got this coach. I was like, dude, whatever they told you, you need to share it. Cause I think there's a million guys out there who are like, holy shit, I haven't slept in a year. I would love to have this sleep coach. And so what he basically said, and I'll give you, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, your child needs to train. You need to train the child's neurons in their brain to know that it's time for sleep. And so if they're not ready to go to bed, you have to train them. It's time to go to bed. So you create a nighttime routine. And I'll tell you what she said. And then, you know, in the middle of the night, if they wake up, it's like, you don't entertain the thought of like getting up. It's just like, bring them in bed, go back to sleep, and they'll sleep with you. Cause they'll feel your energy. Anyways, man, it's worth like looking, I don't know the lady's name who was the sleep coach, but it's worth looking into, like, and I don't think kids that young should be getting up. I think if we can learn, if we can teach them to manage their physiology and manage their, the brain, you're literally creating a habit, right?
Yeah.
So, I know I'm not answering your question, but to answer your question, I if you have the time in the day, get the sleep, man. It's not going to help you. Like long term, it's not a solution to take a nap during the day, in my opinion. It never seems to help most people. Maybe it is useful, but I'd say in general, the ideal circumstance is like helping your son to learn the skill of sleeping through the night.
Yeah, because like we have done like, well, we've had a routine like pretty much every single night, and it kind of, it just seems like sometimes the routine is like way off. Like sometimes you'll have a nap through the day or whatever, and then like probably the worst schedule possible, and then he'll like sleep all the way through the night. So like you've done all that hard work, and then one of the worst days he sleeps all the way through the night, and you're just like, what's going on?
Man, it's the human system. It's a gift.
Yeah, so that sleep coach would definitely be helpful. I'll definitely look her up.
Jacques is saying avoidance of dairy. That's interesting. Yeah. The one thing that this lady said that I thought was interesting is like nighttime routine always starts with a bath, and then you read two books, and during the books, at the end of the books, you say goodnight to everything in the room and the people in the book. And then like, then you put like your, so you're, everyone's going to bed. You're preparing everyone for bed. They're starting to realize like, oh, well, they're going to bed too. And this year they're going to bed too. And they're going to bed too. I guess I have to go to bed too. And the kid goes, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm like, that's brilliant. Cause like if you're staying up and they're going to bed, they're like, well, I'm not, why am I going awake? And you know, even if a very young child, they're like, you're staying awake. I want to stay awake too. So it's like saying goodnight to all of their friends and all of their the stuffed animals and whatever. It's like, it's a brilliant routine.
I got another question, Ben. You talked about the importance of morning light when you first get up. Sometimes with my schedule, I get up anywhere from 2:30 in the morning till 5 a.m. and start my day. Do you have any recommendations on days when I have to do that to get that morning light?
Yeah. So are you like staying in the house for the first few hours of the day, or are you heading out?
Typically heading out. Typically I'll go out, walk, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 steps, and then start the day, go into an office. I have a 3-hour drive, something like that. Off to the gym. It really depends. The schedule is kind of alternating because of where my businesses are placed.
Yeah. So the challenge is going to be, if you view light early, meaning like multiple hours before the sun comes up, what's going to happen is you're going to go up, you're going to be really stimulated, and then you're going to come down and want to sleep. So I would time your light exposure to be, you know, maybe an hour before the sun rises, maybe. So like I'll put all the bright lights in my house on. But as I said, it backfires sometimes. You have to get up at 3 and you know there's going to be like, you know, 2 hours of darkness before you get to see the sun. You'll get sleepy. Very, very, not for sure, but very likely you'll get sleepy. So, yep. So I would try to like wait a little bit. Again, ideally the ideal circumstances, you turn them on, you leave them on, you get the brightest lights you can until the sun comes up. That's ideal. But I understand if you're going to be driving for 3 hours, that's going to be very hard for you. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, man. Not really a solution.
Ben, I think I've asked you this one before, and like I find, my deep sleep's really bad, really low, like usually under 20 minutes a night.
What are you measuring it with?
Garmin and Aura.
Both of them are consistent.
So yeah, and it just seems like, I think of late, I just took a break and went out camping for 3-4 days, which helped. But anything which has been only in probably the past 2-3 months, anything that could possibly interrupt my sleep kind of fires me straight out of sleep, and not in kind of like a groggy way. Like I wake up straight away, so it's like an itch. If it's a car horn outside, even the first night of camping, which I was on, I was down by the beach. And when a big wave would hit, my body would like spark me straight up, like not even, you know, and I was awake, like flicking a switch, like not even like emerging from sleep. So
yeah,
even if so, I do like
Well, so you think of like the states of brain excitation, right? So gamma being the highest state, beta being kind of like day to day, alpha being this meditative, theta being hypnagogic, and delta being sleep. It sounds like you're staying in delta and you're staying in theta. Your body doesn't want to go into delta, which is this deep wave sleep. So something you're doing at the level of the brain and the nervous system is influencing it. So are you taking any substances, alcohol, pharmaceuticals, anything that would be like, no caffeine at all?
Or caffeine stops at midday. So I have like 2, maybe 3 coffees before midday.
Yeah, that's a tough one, man. So to get your brain into delta sleep, I mean, you could go to the supplement route. I just got to think, like, what's going to stop your brain from going into deep wave sleep? Have you ever done like a genetic test? I'm curious if there's the absence of some vitamin or mineral. Jacques may have some insights. There may be something that's absent there, preventing, maybe like you have a COMT mutation, which is preventing the recycling catecholamines. Jacques, what you got on that one?
Yeah, so when I initially heard that, the first thing I heard or thought was like safety, so like cortisol response. Cortisol is suppressed melatonin. And so you can have the external stress of what's going on throughout the day, or as you're falling asleep, if you have any sort of like infection, gut infection, et cetera, your body's going to be attacking that. It's going to create localized cortisol in the gut, and then it's going to throw off sleep as well. So sometimes that could be a piece of it. From like an herbal standpoint, I like skullcap and California poppy as like my two, like California poppy is a nerve tonic. It suppresses like negative thoughts. Skullcap quiets a talkative mind. The California poppy is something I use for people with like PTSD from fighting overseas, and it helps them get like a great night's sleep all night long, even if they do have gut infections along the way.
Awesome. Great. Thanks,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, that's great. Great advice. The way I think of supplements though, man, I'm sure Jacques, you and I are on the same page, is like, it's a band-aid, not a solution, right? So like, what can we do to look deeper? You know, maybe it's creating a habit. Maybe the California poppy and skullcap will allow you to create the habit of sleeping more effectively. And that's best case scenario. But, you know, worst case scenario, it's like, well, it's a temporary fix to let you get some sleep to feel better. But what can we actually determine about the cause? Like, what's actually happening at the level of the gut, as he says, or the nervous system or the brain? I'm not sure, man. Maybe worth like doing a little more depth of testing on what you've done lately on the gut or the neurotransmitters or something, or even your genetics. I think, you know, the more I look at genetics, the more you realize that it could be something as ridiculous as the absence of one little vitamin you're missing that's preventing the recycling of catecholamines. So catecholamines are like your stress hormones. They stay elevated. You're going to stay amplified all day, right? As a guy who's like probably, you know, not probably, is a high achiever, like type A personality, got a lot to do. If your catecholamines aren't coming down, you're going to be awake all the time. So it's either, it could be a methylation problem. It could be an amino acid deficiency. It could be a lot of stuff. So maybe just like look a little bit deeper. And if you want us to help, you know, we can support. Jacques, I'm sure, wouldn't mind supporting. So yeah, we can help.
Yeah. That's
at least try. Yeah.
Any recommendations would be great.
Okay. So we'll connect with Andrew and give him the recommended list of tests. I don't know what you can access in Australia, but hopefully you can get what you need.
We'll work it out.
Get you over here.
We'll bring him to Costa Rica, Ben.
Totally. Put it on your calendar, gents. And listen, now you guys got 9 months or something. Costa Rica is the 4th through the 12th. Everybody put it on your calendar. Don't miss it. Space is limited. Book it now. 4th is, I think, a Wednesday, and the 12th is a Thursday or something like that.
What month?
December. Sorry. December. Yeah. So guys, hopefully that gives you a little bit of insight on sleep. And again, I could talk on for hours on sleep, but without direction, assuming everyone's sleeping okay. It's one of these things that you got to make non-negotiable, and it sucks because a lot of cool shit happens at night. Like, I want to go out and have a drink. I want to go and have a party. I want to go out and do fun stuff or have a great meal. Like, man, you got to be non-negotiable with some stuff, unfortunately.
Is there other hacks with the exception of getting exposure to light early in the morning to wake you up aside from caffeine? Like, I've seen some stuff on
breath work. Man, if you do 5 to 10 minutes of breath work, few things are as stimulating as breath work if you learn how to do it correctly. Okay. Breath work is incredible. Exercise is obviously amazing. Anything that gets your adrenaline, your cortisol up, right? So breath work will get your adrenaline, cortisol up. Exercise will get it up. Cold plunge will get it up. Those are all really good, really good solutions. There you go. Jacques says licorice root. Dude, how the fuck are you driving and texting at the same time? Don't hurt anybody. So one of those, man. I mean, cold plunge in the morning. I was with Gavin in Halifax, which is out near Steve, and it was -6. And I walk outside, left the door open. Gavin goes, "Why is it so cold in the house?" And he looks outside, and I'm in the lake doing a little cold plunge, inspired by Mr. Steve Hughes. It was cold, man. You know, it was funny. The water, obviously, the water was cold, but the hardest part was actually walking back on the grass because the grass was frozen and my feet were just getting torn up on this frozen grass. That was the hardest part of the whole plunge.
I'm not crazy enough.
Yeah, you'll get it, man. Dude, once you do it once, you're like, oh, it's not so bad. It's never fun. You're never going to enjoy it. You always have to grab your balls and go, but you know, it is what it is. Gents, if no other questions, and you guys can ask questions about anything, whatever you think is useful, whatever, you know, training-wise, nutrition-wise, testosterone labs. We're doing a testosterone masterclass this Saturday. Last one we did was kind of beginner level. This one's going to be more advanced. So if you guys want to understand a little more about testosterone this Saturday, I think it's 11 a.m. Eastern. But again, you guys can always ask those questions here.
Ben, I got
you. Oh, oh, good.
No, go ahead. I can't see who was talking.
All right. Well, I just had a quick question, Ben. I think I've got some tendonitis in the Achilles, I'm hoping it's not on its way to tear. I've got some BPC in the regimen right now to try to help with it, but I'm still having like a little bit of pain.
I'm losing you, buddy.
Are you able to hear that?
Nope. Say it one more time.
So tips on healing a potentially torn Achilles tendon. Just to keep it short.
What did you do? What did you do to the Achilles? Are you sure it's torn, or does it just feel like really inflamed?
So I was doing and obviously going up in a full contraction, and then around the base of the heel was a little bit sore, and it feels like anytime I go into dorsiflexion, it feels like somebody's cutting my Achilles tendon at the insertion point.
Are you in Scottsdale?
I'm close to, yeah.
There's a guy, I'm looking at this, are you closer to Scottsdale or Tucson?
Scottsdale.
So I'm on a website right now. I'm gonna send you this guy's phone number. I'll send it to you on text. So, yeah,
okay,
I found a guy who's a therapist. He looks like he's relatively well qualified. I'll send you his name. Go see him.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
No problem, man. Any info on jaw and teeth grinding when sleeping? No, man. Is that for yourself or your child? Anyways, I don't have any info on it, man. My son does it too. So I've heard different things. I've heard one, it's normal and natural. I've heard it's an accumulation of stress hormones, like excessive adrenaline. But I've also heard it's very normal and natural. So I don't know, man. I don't know the answer. I'll tell you one thing, though. Like, I used to grind a lot, and I was suggested to do a mouthpiece, like a mouth guard. And I did a mouth guard for a little while, and it obviously prevented me from grinding away at my teeth. But the fact that I had a mouth guard in, I actually found myself grinding more at night, and it carried through to the day. Because like you're like, oh, I got a mouth guard, I can just grind it all the time. So I stopped using a mouth guard when I train. I stopped using a mouth guard all the time. If it's yourself, Des, I would mess with like jaw exercises. Sounds weird, but like these joints become very, very tense. And so if you can like move your tongue around, stretch them up and move your tongue around, it can really loosen off your jaw. I do that literally every day. I'll lengthen out my scalenes. Like, it looks weird, but it's super useful to lengthen out the scalenes in the jaw and get the tongue moving side to side to create some like relaxation through that jaw. Like pulling the jaw, basically pushing it away, that kind of stuff. So you get the scalenes lengthening. It's a useful practice. I literally do it every day. There's not a day that goes by that I don't do it. So that I can, because you'll get pressure headaches if you're a grinder, right? And you start to accumulate tension through the jaw.
Yeah, it was my dentist that kind of recommended I get some because my teeth were kind of like grinding away, or they seen some sort of corrosion or something. But my other half as well, she's been getting like a sore jaw in here, and she's kind of like struggling to open her mouth properly. And I just wasn't sure if that's maybe related to like jaw grinding or somewhat could be like stress or something. Yeah.
And so, man, it sounds weird, but like, why wouldn't a jaw is just another joint? Why wouldn't we move that one more often? Right? It's like practicing getting your mouth wide open, like sticking your tongue out side to side and like moving your neck.
Yeah.
It's a good idea. If you go to a great massage therapist, they should massage your neck, your jaw, your scalenes, like all, like underneath here. You get a lot of tendons that attach underneath your neck.
Yeah.
Like, they should massage all that stuff if you have a good one.
And that was going to be my question, Ben, because I too am a grinder. And I have a mouth guard that, you know, and do you think that'll affect me if I tape mouth guard with tape, mouth tape?
No, it'd be fine.
Should be all right. I'm going to try it. I never tried mouth tape yet, but I'm going to start trying that. And it's just whatever tape, right? I just buy whatever tape, kind of like whatever tape or whatever.
Walgreens and CVS has medical tape, like surgical tape.
Yeah, like the white stuff. Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, it literally costs like three rolls is like $2.
Right.
So don't buy anything like expensive. Just literally like surgical tape.
It's, yeah.
No, nothing. No. Anything else, boys? All right, guys. Get on with your day. I appreciate you guys being here very much. We'll see you again next week. I'm not sure what the topic is next week, but if you guys have any requests on topics you guys want to chat about, let me know. We're happy to oblige. And if not, we'll pick the topic and we'll see you guys next week, same time.
Thanks, good to see you, Ben. See you guys.
See you guys. Good to see you. Take care.